Welcome to the Battle Cry Podcast with Convention of States Action President Mark Meckler. You can watch the original live broadcast Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Convention of States Facebook and Rumble channels.
Hey guys, Mark Meckler here, President of Convention of States, and I'm your host for the Sunday Night Battle Cry. First of all, an apology. I haven't been here in person in a few weeks, and mainly just tons of travel. When I travel on Sundays, it makes it very hard for me to do the Battle Cry with you guys. And so this week, I'm here, I'm home, I'm ready to rip. I'm excited about it. I'm not sure I'll be here next week, but we'll see what happens. This week, I'm here, and there is so much to talk about. There's so much going on out there in the world. So many things I think we need to cover. So many and very important things. For me, as a person of faith, as I look out at the world and I see all the stuff going on, all the craziness going on, there's always a lot of craziness going on. I always try to center myself in my faith, center myself in my relationship with God, and center myself in scripture, in the word, because there's so much wisdom there. And I got to say to you, whether you're a person of faith or not, whether you're a Christian or a Jew or whatever you are, atheist, remember, I spent most of my life as an atheist or an agnostic, there's wisdom in the Bible, no matter what. And it's just, it stood the test of time. If you live a life according to the Bible, you're going to live a good life, generally speaking, going to do good things for other people. And there's a lot of good stuff in there to teach you what to do, especially in times of crisis. We live in a time of crisis, and times of crisis always come in individual lives, in societies, in countries, and in your city, there'll be crisis. And so how to handle crisis and knowing that crisis is going to come is really important. There's a time and a season for everything. And this week, our theme for the Battle Cry is there is a time to fight. And we talk about peace a lot, and we should love everybody, and we should not fight with others, but there's a time to fight. And this is a time to fight. Time to fight, in my opinion, is right now. And by that, I mean now, like now, and I mean you personally. It's not enough to just watch the Battle Cry or listen to Ben Shapiro or whoever it is you listen to, whether that's Dave Rubin or whoever your favorite host is or whatever you like to read, Epoch Times, all that stuff's good. You got to be informed. You got to have the knowledge. But then you got to put on the full armor of God, and you got to go out there, and you got to get in the fight. So I want to start by going to scripture, which is where I go when I'm trying to figure out how to deal with life on a day-to-day basis. And today I want to read to you from Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 8. And again, I don't normally do scripture straight up for you guys, but I'm going to do it today. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. And so many of those things are so poignant at different points in your life, different points in a society right now. I think we should look at the one where it says there's a time to love and a time to hate and a time for war and a time for peace. Because I think we live in a time, in a society where there's time for all of those things. We always start from a point of love, that we love our fellow man. We're supposed to love our fellow man as we love ourselves. We're supposed to love God first, right? All of those things really important. But there is also a time to hate. And I think there's sort of a misimpression, especially among Christians, that it's just all love all the time. But we're actually supposed to hate the things that God hates, right? And it literally says that straight in the Bible. So yeah, we're supposed to love and we're supposed to come from a place of love, but we're also supposed to hate and we're supposed to be at peace with our fellow man, and we practice peace and we believe in peace. Jesus was the Prince of Peace. But it says right here in the Bible that there's a time for war also. Right now, the first subject I want to talk about today is Israel. And for Israel, it's a time for war. If you look at Israel's history, and I mean history, not just modern history, but you go all the way back to biblical times, the way Israel had peace is according to God's laws, living according to the laws of God. Then things were good and well with the Hebrew people, with the Jewish people. And when they didn't, it didn't go so well. And when they came back to God and came back to God's laws and lived that way, lived biblically, things went pretty well for them. But they also faced a lot of external pressures, external wars that they had to go through. And sometimes because God asked them to go and take a particular land, sometimes because they were being invaded. But Israel has gone through its entirety of its history, its very long history, times of war and peace. And this is a time for war in Israel in the modern era. And I want to be really clear, both morally clear and clear factually about what happened here recently in Israel. And by recently, I'm going to go back to October 7th of last year, maybe just a little bit before October 7th of last year. You know, Israel has been a modern nation since the 1940s now. And it's been a modern nation. The Palestinian people, which is actually just a made-up name, the people who live in that region, mostly of Jordanian extraction, were given the opportunity to have their own country side by side, living in peace with Israel. They refused. And they've refused multiple times. And the Jews, Israel has always been willing for there to be a homeland for those people living in peace next door to Israel, as long as they were willing to live in peace. And multiple times throughout modern history, since the creation of the modern state of Israel, there have been offers on the table to create a quote-unquote Palestinian homeland, which have been rejected by the Palestinians themselves. And that's important to note to set this all up. There's been an ongoing fight in what's called the West Bank. The West Bank, to title it properly, in biblical terms, in historical terms, is Judea and Samaria. And these are areas traditionally Jewish, Hebrew areas, Israelite areas, Judea and Samaria. You know those terms from the Bible. And then there's Gaza. And those areas were given over to the Palestinians in order that the Palestinians might govern themselves and see how they would do with that. Gaza specifically entirely turned over to Palestinian governance. No Israeli military presence in Gaza, no Israeli governing presence in Gaza. And what they did in Gaza, the Gazans, the Palestinians, immediately destroyed Gaza. There was a lot of infrastructure there that the Israelis had created before they turned it over. Literally hundreds of millions of dollars in greenhouses or a thriving industry there. Those were immediately destroyed by the Palestinians that lived there. They came in and took over. Now, literally billions of dollars have flowed into Gaza for a very long time since Gaza was turned over to the Palestinian people. Enough to build out infrastructure, enough to build a thriving economy, enough to give the Palestinian people what they need to essentially be the Hong Kong or the Singapore of the Middle East. And instead, what they've done is built terror infrastructure, tunnels, weaponry, a militarized people, a radicalized people, an education system supported by and fostered by the UN under the auspices of UNRWA. They are educating Palestinian people to hate Israelis, to hate Jews, to hate Jewish children, to believe in the eradication of Israel. And this is a culture that's been built inside Gaza. There have been multiple military skirmishes back and forth between Gaza, which was taken over by Hamas, and hasn't been an election there in, 15, 20 years, something like that. I can't remember exactly how long time since Hamas took over. No open elections. But it's estimated about 70% of the people of Gaza support Hamas. Hamas is an avowed terrorist organization. Within its charter, it says that their intent is to destroy Israel. They hate the U.S. as well. They call us Big Satan. Israel is Little Satan. So there have been military skirmishes back and forth. There have been intifadas, which are military or violent uprisings against Israel. But on October 7th, 2023, something radical and different happened. The security fence between Gaza and Israel was breached in a coordinated action by Hamas militants and regular citizens of Gaza. They poured across the fence line. They slaughtered over 1,200 Jews. And when I say slaughtered, if you haven't seen any of the video footage, I recommend you watch it, though it's hard. They burned babies alive in ovens. They raped wives in front of their husbands. They raped women so brutally, they raped them until they were dead. I want you to imagine that, not just rape, not just killing them, but rape until death. These are the kinds of things that they did. They took over 200 hostages, men, women, children, elderly, separated children from parents, elderly from their families, took them to Gaza, murdered, raped, tortured them. They still hold, by number, over 100 hostages. We believe that the majority of those are probably dead by now. Some of the hostages that ultimately got released, Some were freed by the Israeli military. Some were traded in a hostage exchange, described incredible torture, rape, mutilation, psychological torture. This is sets us up for where we're at now. So the Israeli army took their time, slowly went into Gaza. They've cleared out most of Gaza now. Now you have, because they're, when I say cleared out Gaza, they're literally going house to house and removing Hamas. Hamas itself embeds itself in the civilian population. They don't wear military uniforms. They dress like civilians. They hide weapons in homes, schools, and hospitals. There is a network of terror tunnels under Gaza, hundreds of miles long. They hide in those tunnels, again, under schools, hospitals, residential areas. They use civilians as human shields. So the Israeli military has gone into Gaza, meticulously going house by house, doing everything they can to clear the areas of civilians first. Hamas trying to prevent the removal of civilians, killing civilians who were trying to leave because they want those civilian shields in front of Israel's military. Israel has sacrificed hundreds of their fighters by going into Gaza in this way. Israel has total air superiority in Gaza. They could go in, they could level all of Gaza, they could wipe out all military infrastructure. They could do that without any regard for human life, any regard for civilian populations, and they would lose probably no soldiers that way. Instead, they went in on the ground, house by house. They've lost hundreds of soldiers. By the way, in a close quarter combat like that, on the ground, in a damaged urban area, friendly fire is one of the most dangerous things. And over a third of all Israeli casualties have been to friendly fire. It's very dangerous in an environment like that. But the Israelis taking every caution to protect the civilian population. Hundreds of trucks of civilian aid going in a day to the population of Gaza, a lot of which now, if not all of which, or most of which, being stolen by Hamas to feed their military and their fighters. Is this unprecedented in human history? Where when you are at war with an enemy force, you actually go in and feed their population while you're at war. It's not been done. It's never been expected of another country. It is expected of Israel. And Israel does the best job of waging war to avoid civilian casualties in a humanitarian way of any nation in the history of the world. And yet what we see in America and abroad, and especially in the Middle East, and especially among our enemies, is Israel being accused of genocide. Now, it's important to remember what the term genocide means. It doesn't mean warfare. Genocide means an attempt to wipe out an entire population of a genetically related people. If Israel was trying to wipe out or commit genocide against the Palestinian people, they would simply use their air power superiority and they would just wipe out the entire population. Instead, they've evacuated the population from the areas that they're invading. There are civilian casualties. Again, those casualties come because Hamas refuses to allow people to move out or people choose not to move out of combat areas. But Israel is doing everything they can to avoid civilian casualties. That is not a genocide. And it is a horrendous and horrific slander intended to attack the Jewish people. It is anti-Semitic. It is a blood libel. It is intentional. And this is what the Palestinians are trying to do to the Jewish people. They're waging a propaganda war intended to vilify the Jewish people, intended to Nazify the Jewish people, when the real Nazis, the people with a real ideology to eradicate the Jewish people, that's what Nazism was partially about, was the eradication of the Jews, are Hamas and are the Palestinians. And so that's where we find ourselves right now. And recently, about a week ago, the Israelis did a pinpoint strike on the leaders, Iranian military leaders and Hamas military leaders. They're in Syria. They're in a consulate in Syria. These were the leaders that had planned this October 7th attack against Israel. And they took out a bunch of those leaders. Very amazingly targeted strike. And Iran said that it was going to get revenge. And so, as you all know, last week, Iran launched over 300 drones, ballistic missiles, and other kinds of missiles into Israel. Thank God, and I do mean thank God, and all the technology that the Israelis have, and Americans helped, and the British helped. It sounds like the Jordanians helped, maybe the UAE helped. There was help from other nation states. Virtually all of those incoming ordnance were shot down. There was one casualty, as I understand it. I haven't heard her status as of late, but she was an Arab Bedouin girl severely injured by shrapnel from a falling incoming Iranian rocket. This dramatically changed the conflict because Iran had always attacked Israel through proxies, through Hezbollah, through Hamas, through Syria, other places where they had attacked, but not directly from their own territory against Israel. And so this was a pretty radical escalation. Iran says it was in response for the killing of their military officials, but this was a massive attack. So the question was, what would Israel do about that? And we now know last night, Israel launched an attack on Iran proper, but not just Iran, Iraq, Syria. They were sending the message that we can get you wherever you are. We know where your leaders are. They attacked some of the military leadership. We know where your airfields are in Iran. They attacked Isfahan, which is a major airfield for the Iranian Air Force, the biggest Iranian Air Force airfield. It's also very nearby one of their major nuclear research installations where they're working to get a nuclear weapon. They wanted to send a message, I believe, to the Iranians that we know where you are, we know where you sleep, we can get in, we can penetrate your airspace. It doesn't matter whether you're in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, or in Iran proper, we know where you are and we can get you. It was a limited strike. Still don't know. We still don't know how much damage it did, but that's kind of the state of play in the Middle East. I believe what's going to happen next is that Israel is going to finish the job in Gaza. They have one major city left, one stronghold. That stronghold is called Rafah, and they're going to go in there, I believe, pretty soon. I think they now have the go-ahead to do this. The United States has been trying to hold them back. I think that's terrible. We should tell Israel, do whatever you got to do to have secure borders, kind of like we should have our own secure borders. You can see why Joe Biden would try to hold Israel back. He doesn't even want us securing our borders. And so I think they're going to go in. They're going to clean out Rafah. They're going to have to move the civilian population out of there first, and that's important. Again, that's what they're going to do, just like they've done all across there. Then they're going to have to deal with whatever uprising they have in the West Bank, in Judea and Samaria. And then at some point, and this is really important, they're going to have to deal with Hezbollah on their northern border in Lebanon. They're going to have to wipe out Hezbollah. As dangerous as Hamas was, Hezbollah is much more dangerous. They have somewhere between 150 and 200,000 rockets, at least 50,000 of them precision-guided rockets. They will hit targets in Israel. Iron Dome probably couldn't handle it if they launched a full barrage all at once. So if Israel wants security in Israel proper, and they need it, about 100,000 Israeli citizens have been moved out of their homes and have been out of their homes for many months now because of the threats from Hezbollah in northern Israel. So they're going to have to fix that. And I believe they are going to fix that. So they're going to deal with Rafah and finish it off. They're going to have a permanent military presence, I believe, in Gaza. They're probably going to up the military presence in the West Bank. They're going to have to deal with Hezbollah in the north. And they're sending a message to Iran that you better back off or we're going to finish you off. So I think that's the state of play in the Middle East. And what that means is it is a wartime footing in Israel. As I said, there's a time for war and a time for peace. And in Israel, this is the time for war. And I would say for America, what this means is it's about Israel, but it's not just about Israel. This has come home to roost in the United States. The Hamasniks, the Hamazis in America are marching in the streets. They're making demands. They're threatening Jews all over the country. They're burning American flags. They're saying death to America. This is not a war of Israel against Arab nations. This is not a war of Israel against Hamas or Hezbollah or even Iran. This is the West against radical Islam. And the question is, do we have the fortitude, we here in the United States, to do what it takes to stand up against radical Islam? I think you do. I think I do. But I wonder if our government does. Certainly Joe Biden does not. He's been pressuring Israel to stand down since the Obama administration. Obama and his team were very pro-Iran, pro-Islamist. The same is true for the Biden administrations. You got Obama, Biden, and the axis with Iran. It's really bad. And so the question is, will we stand up here in this country when we see these Hamasniks, these Hamas Nazis on the streets protesting? Will we step in and say something about that? I can tell you personally, I'm watching to see if there's going to be a protest in Austin. I'll go. I will be there. I'll bring somebody with a camera. I'll show you what happens. They're going to try and take an American flag away from me because I would carry an American flag. I would be wearing clothing with sporting the American flag. I guarantee you they will try to assault because they do that everywhere. It won't go very well for them. And we'll get that on film if that happens. And we need to be doing that all over the country. We, as God-fearing patriots, America-loving patriots, we need to fight back. So there's that kind of warfare going on in the United States. We've got Hamas ideologically invading the universities, our government. Ilhan Omar is a Hamas representative. Ilhan Omar is a Hamas supporter. Rashida Tlaib, Hamas supporter. The whole squad, Hamas supporters. Bernie Sanders, Hamas supporter. We've got them in our government. We've got them in our business. It happened at Google this week. There was a huge sit-in at Google this week where a bunch of Hamas supporters tried to tell Google they had to stop doing business with Israel. And instead, they all got fired. Good for Google. Appreciate that. You should do that. So what we've got going on is Hamas here in the United States. It hasn't gotten violent yet. We haven't seen an October 7th style attack, but I'm worried that we may. We also have going on in the United States what I would call politics as warfare. So I want to run through a few things like that. In politics, what we've got now is the entire political system, the legal system, what we call lawfare, has been weaponized against the right. We've got the persecution prosecutions of Donald Trump. We've got the persecution prosecutions of the J6 defendants, outrageous sentencing. Anybody in the conservative movement is a potential target. I'm a potential target as a public figure. You're a potential target. John Eastman was a lawyer for Donald Trump. He got targeted. The California bar says now they're stripping him of his bar, of his license to practice law. This is all just lawfare. And it's ugly. And that means now it's time for us to fight. We should fight against this. You and I should step up, talk about it, say stuff about it. But also, we should use lawfare. And it's not what we like to do, but I would say if and when Republicans get power in Congress, and if then when they get power of the presidency and control the DOJ, we should go after our political opponents hard with the DOJ. I want to be clear, not like the Democrats in a lawless way, but according to the law, within every inch of the law, as far as the law will allow us to take it, we should prosecute and persecute Democrat donors, Democrat politicians, Democrat officials, administration officials, people in the administrative state. We should make it difficult for them like they've done for us, because this is the only way we're going to reset the playing field. I don't like this kind of political warfare, lawfare stuff, but the left is using it on us in full force for everybody to see. It's in plain sight. And if we don't do it back to them, we're never going to get to ground zero. I'm not guaranteeing we can get back to ground zero, but we've got to be willing to fight. Again, there's a time to love and a time to hate. And I hate this kind of stuff. And I hate the kind of people that are doing this kind of stuff. I love them as human beings. I hate them as political actors. There's a time for war and a time for peace. This is a time for war. So we're in it. And I hope you're in it with me. Let's move to another subject about a time for war, this gender ideology stuff. Look, they're telling you, they're telling us, they're saying it openly everywhere that what's going on in this country is there's no men and women. Everybody's a man and a woman. There's no gender. There's 57 genders. Gender is fluid. We should teach kids to be gender confused, which is going to lead to more suicide, more depression, more mental illness. We know that. We should give them drugs, which are going to permanently destroy their bodies, and we should mutilate their genitals. Their healthy body parts should be cut off and or mutilated. That's what we're learning. That's the gender ideology. It is the destruction of what it means to be a human being, and we should go to war against that. I hate that. I hate gender ideology. I hate it openly. I'll speak about it. There is no such thing as a trans person. You cannot transition from one gender to another. You are born male or female. You are made male or female by God. Outside of that, you have chromosomes in your body. At the level of every single cell in your body, you are male or female. You cannot transition. People say, do you deny we exist? Do you see us? Yes, I deny that trans people exist. I do believe there are people who have mental illness. Either they believe they're the other gender, they're mentally ill, they have gender dysphoria, or they have sick, perverted fantasies about being the other gender. they're mentally ill as well. So that war is going on, and we should fight that war. We should speak it boldly and proudly and without fear, and we should be in that fight. We should hate that ideology. We should go to war against that ideology. You should be involved in that fight. You heard about the term DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's just intentional racism. They're saying we should punish white people for being white, and we should elevate victims. You're a victim if you're a person of color, if you're Black or Hispanic, anything other than just a straight white bread person, I guess. I don't know whether I qualify or not. I'm Jewish. I'm a Jewish Christian, and I'm white. I don't know what I am. Anyway, I don't really care about any of that stuff, but this is what the left wants to impose on us. They're teaching your kids to judge people by the color of their skin and not the content of their character. We should hate that. We should be at war against that. How about ESG, all these acronyms, emotional and social governance, saying that companies should be judged on their diversity, equity, inclusion scores, about what they do in the environment, about things other than business. And this is causing all kinds of dangerous stuff. It's causing us to hire people who shouldn't be hired. It's causing us to lower qualifications for positions. It's causing our military to have people in the military that are mentally ill, that believe they're men who believe that they're women, and women who believe that they're men, and we're supposed to spend money for that. It's not about combat. It's not about military readiness. It's about promoting mental illness and destabilizing our military, destabilizing business, destroying businesses. We should hate that, and we should be at war against that. I'll give you a specific example of the madness going on out there. NPR just hired a completely unqualified in the media CEO, but she is the classic middle-aged white ultra-liberal leftist, and like the worst of the worst as far as behavior in our society today. She believes in the gender ideology. She believes in the political warfare. She believes in the DEI and the intentional racism. She believes in the emotional social governance stuff for corporations. And she says, if you're a white person, you're bad. If you're a Black person, you're a victim. If you're a man, you're not really a man. You might be a woman if you think you're a woman. And this is NPR, National Public Radio. By public, I mean you pay for that. You're forced to pay for that. They should be defunded, denuded. They should cease to exist. We should wipe them out. You know, colleges are associated with them. Every state that has state colleges should decouple their state colleges from public radio. When I was in college, back in my days at San Diego State, we had a public radio station. We had public radio affiliation. That should go away. We should drive these guys from the airwaves. They're avowed leftists with the intent to destroy everything that's good and righteous about the United States of America. All right, so we're at war. Is that not clear to you? We're at war. We're at war politically. We're at war socially. We're at war culturally. We have been helping Israel in the Middle East. We're at war there. We're spending money in Ukraine, I think unaccountably with no plan. We're at war there. There is a time for peace and there is a time for war. There's a time for love and a time to hate. There's a time to tear down and a time to build. Right now, the left is trying to tear down the country. Our goal is to rebuild. But remember, 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 we're at war in this country right now. You're fighting for the survival of the country, the survival of the things that made this country extraordinary and great, a country founded on Judeo-Christian principles, a country founded on the idea of free markets and capitalism that has elevated more people out of poverty, more people out of servitude than any system in the history of the world. Those are the things that you and I are fighting for. So again, the battle cry this week, get out there and fight. Get engaged in the fight. If you're not involved in COS yet, go to conventionofstates.com and sign the petition. Click on the Take Action tab and get involved, or anywhere, anything. Get involved in something you believe in. Run for office. Sign up for another organization. Give money to political causes. Give money to your church. Minister to other people. You have got to be in the fight because the war is going on. Let's talk a little bit about what happened last week in COS world. For me personally, I was on the road. I went to UC Berkeley. I know, gasp, right? Dangerous. I went to UC Berkeley to speak to a political science class. I've done this a few times before. It's one of my speaking engagements that I enjoy more than any other. Really great professor at UC Berkeley. He's a political science professor. He's got a class that's nothing but speakers, and they don't announce the speakers in advance, so there's no protests. And I got to tell you, when I go there, the first time I went, I had a little bit of trepidation. I like that kind of stuff, but I thought it might be crazy. It was actually great. The students are great. I would say still what you would expect, mostly very far left, but they're open-minded. They're willing to have conversations. They're were polite and engaging. And I found the same thing this time. It was a polite, engaged audience. They had a bunch of questions when we were done. Some students even stuck around to talk to me afterwards. I got a chance to talk to some very conservative students, believe it or not, that are there at UC Berkeley, who just thanked me for coming and said they never get to hear from anybody like me. And then some very liberal students that had some questions about some things that I had said. And one of the things that I heard over and over is, we've never heard anything like this. We're not exposed to stuff like this. We really appreciate your willingness to come and talk to us like this. I tell you that so that you have some hope. There is hope. The young generation, it's not lost. There's hope even at a place like UC Berkeley. And then I had a dinner that night, hung out with a bunch of great patriots, conservative patriots in the heart of San Francisco. All right, these are donor types in San Francisco who believe like you believe. I know you think that city is completely lost and there's a lot to make fun of or a lot to be worried about in that city. But we met some great people that I've never met before, some we already knew. These are great patriots living in San Francisco. And this is important to note, whether you go to New York or San Francisco or any other big city that you're worried is completely lost, Philadelphia, Boston, Detroit, you will find conservative great patriots in those places. The remnant is there, and I believe that that remnant is rising. So what's happening next week in the COS world for me? Well, I'm traveling out to Colorado. There's two things going on in Colorado. First of all, on Monday the 22nd, we're going to have a hearing in Colorado on the COS resolution. I'm always excited when we have that kind of stuff going on. So you guys can pay attention to that online. You can find that on our website. We will live broadcast that. That hearing is the 22nd at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. You can watch COS Live at conventionofstates.com/COS Live. Watch that hearing again. That is Monday the 22nd at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. And then second, I'm going to be in Colorado a couple days after that. So I will be there on April 25th at the Capitol. So if you want to meet me, if you want to come hang out, if you want to ask me some questions, I'm always open to hanging out and talking to anybody who wants to be there. If you're in COS and you've been a volunteer, you're thinking about volunteering, come out, meet me directly. We'll be out at the Capitol West Steps, and that is April 25th. And I'm going to be there at 11 a.m. on the West Steps of the Capitol. That's Mountain Time, local time, 11 a.m., April 25th, West Steps of the Colorado Capitol. And then finally, COS at Home, something we try to bring people on that you know, people who support us, who are famous, who are doing other great things out in the world. So on Wednesday, May 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern time, I'm super excited about this. We're going to have Kirk Cameron. Kirk's done so much in his career. He's become really, I think, one of the more important Christian conservative voices out there in the media. He's got a new children's show that he's working on right now called Mr. Kirk and Iggy. I've seen the previews. It looks awesome. Kind of like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, teaching your kids the right values. I'm so glad content like that is being made. So that's Wednesday, May 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern time. We'll keep announcing that, but definitely keep your eyes out for that one. Kirk's just a joy to work with, and he's always interesting. All right, we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to do some Q&A. Not talk. I'll talk a little, but I'm going to answer your questions. To me, this is the most important part of what I do. The fact that you guys are engaged and listening is really important to me, and responding to your questions. It's the most fun I have because you're the smartest people I know. I'm going to start with this. It says, do you have an argument? This is from Big Chase. Do you have an argument when people say COS wants to separate from the country? Do you have an argument? Well, yeah, we're trying to do the exact opposite. Look, I think the country's coming apart and the country may break apart. And we're trying to prevent that. And the way you prevent that is by calling a convention of states, getting the power out of Washington, D.C., and giving the states the breathing room to be different. One of the reasons we're fighting so much among ourselves, we're at war with each other, essentially, not physically yet, but at war, psychologically, socially, is because Washington, D.C. says we have to do everything the same. One size fits all from Washington, D.C. doesn't work. New York and Texas are not the same. California and Iowa are not the same, and they're not going to be the same. And so what we want to do is take power away from D.C. and give it back to the states, and that prevents the country from coming apart. So Big Chase, I would say the main thing to know is we're trying to do the exact opposite. Johnny P., this is another secession question, says, if Texas were to secede, peacefully or not, couldn't Oklahoma and Louisiana at least consider it as well? What would stop those three newly independent countries from joining in a union? And the answer is, there's no method in the Constitution for secession. I would argue that states, in essence, always have the human right to secede, because if a government becomes oppressive to the people, if the federal government is too oppressive to the people, then states can secede. I think it's not a legal principle. This is a human principle. Humans have sovereignty over their own destiny. The Constitution does not provide a mechanism for secession. So I would argue it probably wouldn't be peaceful. I'm not in favor of it. I'm not promoting it. It may come to that, but that's not my route. I'd like to see the country stay together. I think we need to. But if that happened, and your question was theoretically, could those three newly independent countries join a union? Of course they could. Nothing would stop them from joining a union. I mean, and there are other states that might want to do it too. It seems like a lot of the states in the South, the redder states, Florida and states like that, Louisiana, Mississippi, they have share cultural ideology, I would argue. And so you might see the country split apart. I don't know exactly physically what that would look like. South Dakota and North Dakota tend to be really conservative. So how would it happen physically? Look, I'm not a fan of secession. I don't believe in secession. I don't want to see secession. But theoretically, if there were secession, nothing would stop those states from joining together. Biff Tannen asks, is there an effort to get the NRA on board with an Article 5 COS like Heritage has? You know, Biff, NRA's had its own problems over the last few years. There's a lot of turmoil inside. You may or may not know. We haven't talked to them. They've been neutral on convention of states, and so far I've been happy with that. But look, if you know anybody inside NRA, I'd be happy to have a conversation with them. So it'd be great to have them on board. I don't know that they'll ever do that or not. Karen Lachny asks, when can COS happen? Well, as soon as you make it happen. I mean, it's really up to you, Karen. I don't know where you're from, but we have 15 states to go to get on board. North Carolina, hoping to be next. We've already passed in the House, looking for the Senate. That could make us number 20. We're litigating in Kansas right now. That could make us number 21. 21, that would leave us with 13 states to go. It'll happen as fast as those 13 state legislatures pass the resolution. So if you know conservatives and they're not on board, you got to ask them, what's wrong with you? You need to help us do this. Finally, I'm just going to close out again. Colorado rally at the Capitol, April 25th, 11 a.m. Mountain Time. Colorado hearing on Monday, the 22nd, 3:30 Eastern Time. Watch that at conventionofstates.com/COS Alive. And then Kirk Cameron, Wednesday, May 1st, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. conventionofstates.com/@home. Talked a lot today. I'm out of wind. It's time for me to take a break and go back to work on Monday. I'll see you next week somewhere out there. Hopefully I'll see you in Colorado and next week back here on The Battle Cry.
This has been the podcast version of The Battle Cry with Mark Meckler. Visit conventionofstates.com/pod to learn more. Thank you for listening.